Thanks, Marion and Tiffany, for inviting me. And I think coming at the end of the symposium, most of the points that I make are going to be from a personal perspective, but we've got many models for involving undergraduates in research. University of Georgia is a R1 university, of course, and the students' motivation is much the same as we've heard from the students who've talked to us for getting involved with undergraduates. Faculty, I have to say, I want to go back and talk to some of our administrators about rewards. We don't, there aren't many tangible benefits. Anyway, I want to talk about the goals as I see some of the goals, and I'm going to touch on a number of aspects and some strategies that have worked for my lab, which mirror a lot of things that Susan Weller's lab and students do. And finally, that picture didn't come through, the organism that has become the workhorse for work study and student work in my lab, the wild bug. So what's involved in supervising undergraduate research? In just a minute, I'll say a few words about the perspective maybe of the professor, and we've already heard quite a bit about the student's perspective. They're invariably keen and enthusiastic. But the professor, turns out assistant professors are not well advised to take on many undergraduate research projects because it's a pretty time-consuming investment. And we are all, as everyone is quite well aware of, I'm preaching to the choir, we've got lots of work, lots on our plate, committees, classes, grants, publications, etc., to worry about. But at the same time, we do have an obligation to the students. And for me, the Renaissance, I was very pleased that Ron was invited to participate in the symposium because the Renaissance came in the early 80s when I got put on a committee with a science educator. And just as Ron described, sort of on opposite sides of the street, there was no real previous interaction, not much motivation to talk to the people in science ed, but they opened up a whole new world to me being on this committee. And one thing led to another, and most of the early students that I had were from the science education department rather than from the biology department. Entomology students, we don't have much of an undergraduate program, so we were mostly getting undergraduate students who were majoring in biology, who wanted to put something on their resume, and but it was the science educators who showed me a lot. But we want to get our students, and teachers are trying to accomplish the same thing now as a result of the 1996 National Science Standards. Inquiry. Think like a scientist, learn how to design experiments, practice data analysis, and enhance writing skills and the whole nine yards that goes along with that. Well, students are keen, but they're also larvae. They're going to grow up. They're going to go through metamorphosis. They're not quite sure how they're going to get there. And mostly, when they first come walking into the office, if you talk to them for a few minutes, you discover that last point. Is it going to get me into med school, especially the biology students? So I'm dealing with these two major groups of students, but they're keen, they're enthusiastic. At the same time, from the perspective of the professor, I'm trying to think, well, how can I optimize this process? I want to do it. It's a lot of fun. There's not much reward for me from the academic standpoint in many cases, but there are some things. So ideally, it should be a kind of a win-win situation. Over the years, I've known a number of colleagues who are probably accepting undergraduates in many cases for the wrong kinds of reasons. Many of my colleagues want someone just to come in and wash dishes. They aren't particularly anxious to involve them in the research, but if they get a good student, pans out after a semester, then they might pawn them off on a graduate student or a postdoc. they themselves have a very involved aspect to it. But I've never felt that way about it, fortunately, and I see it as an opportunity. I've always had the benefit of having graduate students in the lab and occasional postdocs over the years, and these students, it's a two-way street, as you've heard. They can be excellent mentors being involved with the undergraduates, and at the same time, they're going to learn from the undergraduates and help crystallize a lot of their own work and get good credentials for their own benefit. And it's a fact, students, especially as I got more and more of a gray beard, students relate much better to their students and graduate students who are their own age, more in their peer group. They're a little bit less intimidating, perhaps, although I try not to be too intimidating. And the other thing that works very well is to involve them right from the start. We have weekly lab meetings with my graduate students. We bring in the undergraduates, and I have to say I seldom have more than four in a semester. I don't have a huge program, but those four get very much of a personal attention. And these weekly lab meetings help also to increase their comfort level. And one of the things that I wanted to point out here is that I've also enjoyed having colleagues who are not necessarily in academia. They might be lab techs, they might be friends who were just interested who would also attend the lab meeting. So there rapidly the undergraduates came to realize that there wasn't any such thing as a stupid or dumb question. Shared participation benefits all, and it wasn't more than two or three meetings before they began to regularly participate. And it gives them an opportunity to it keeps the time schedule going. If they haven't got something new to report or talk about every week, they kind of become aware of the fact that maybe they've got to do something a little bit more. It benefits everybody. So the weekly get-together was one way to be efficient with my time and yet to involve everybody and to keep tabs on the process of what was going on. And as a result of being involved with science educators over the years, I've taken sort of that guided inquiry approach. And Ron alluded to the spectrum there from this kind of right in the middle of the spectrum. Students need a little bit of input, but we want to lead them to design and conduct real experiments, not sham things. We want to also follow that up with communication, as you're experiencing here. Posters, talks are an essential part of the whole experience. Now, I wish we had the ability to pay students, maybe, but I think the fact that they get course credit is a sufficient motivator, and that's the model that we work on primarily at Georgia. They get course credit, and they try to accomplish it in one or at most two semesters or a summer and a semester. In many of the cases, I get teachers who are only there for a semester, especially when they're in-service teachers coming back late in the afternoons after they've taught all day, but they really are keen. And this proverb sort of says it all. We can lecture, we can demonstrate things, we can show pictures, but students who actually get hands-on, get their minds on, they grasp and they grapple, and the result is a level of understanding that is not going to be achieved. And I'm again preaching to the choir here. We hear the term independent research. It's a nice buzzword, but I don't think it's really a realistic thing. As I said, undergraduates are keen, but they are also clueless, in my experience. By and large, they are totally inexperienced. They've had a lot of academic coursework. They're used to taking multiple choice exams, they're used to reading assignments, and very few of them have read any primary literature and had any experience. So we all remember that our best teachers were those who invested time in us, and that's the whole idea. So it's sort of like building any structure. Getting started is hard. There's an enormous number of topics out there, and the approach to it varies, and I'm going to now shift gears a little bit. What has worked in our lab with this small cadre of undergraduates that come every semester. We take a strategy which we call the four questions approach to sort of narrow down the topics. Now, I mean, I have sort of a hidden agenda here because I actually have a topic, a broad topic that I'm going to steer them toward, but it's still a useful exercise. The first question we sit and talk about, what interests you? Are you interested in beetles, bugs, wasps, butterflies? Well, let's just take this as an example, butterflies. Next question, what do butterflies do? And you can fill in the blank. What does blank do? Beetles, wasps, butterflies, bugs, spiders. And you can even narrow it further down, a particular kind of butterfly. And shown here, of course, is just the life cycle of a butterfly. Obviously, they have the life cycle, and those different stages in the life cycle provide opportunities for productive inquiry. At every stage, you can work with the ovipositing female, you can work with the mating behavior, you can work with the, just point out an interesting thing here, the pupae, when they form their chrysalids, depends somewhat on the substrate that they find themselves on, and you get quite a range from dark to light. And so if you say, what do? It helps to spend a bit of time and actually send the students away and say, you know, come on back now with a list and brainstorm. Very effective technique. This is a partial list. You could go on and on and on and on. Any one of these can be developed into a research project. You can talk about what the larva is doing. You can talk about the mating behavior of the adults, molting. How much time, how much space, what about the habitat preferences, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Any number of options. And this brainstorming stage helps generate some ideas in the student's brain, and they begin to see, don't know much about this. For example, once you've got a list, and perhaps they've settled in on maybe they're interested in caterpillar behavior. The next thing to start considering as you develop a project is what things can be manipulated related to butterflies. And one question is food preference. Well, the other thing I started to mention earlier is that we don't get many tangible benefits, and we don't have any budget. And so you're basically scabbing off of research grant money or the limited supplies budget you got. So you're always looking, especially when you work with teachers, this is not a problem because that's the way teachers have to operate in the public schools. But you don't need a lot of money. So here's a simple thing that could lead to a whole undergraduate research project, depending on what species. They might choose the painted lady butterfly, they might choose a cabbage butterfly or some other, even the monarch. And they can go to work and they can stick that caterpillar right in the center and start recording data. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. Or there's things you can do with the adults. For example, butterflies will lay eggs. They are very oriented to the chemistry of the host plants. And what didn't show on the in the lower left down here, and I'm not sure, this is from putting it on a Mac, I guess, but this was just to show that we had a choice of between lettuce and cabbage, and the butterfly, as you can see, oviposits after making sensory contact with its forelegs on the leaf, bends around to lay the egg on the underside of the leaf, and lays it on the film canister plastic, and very clearly a choice is made. Well, again, this part of the brainstorming and ideas, possibilities, just with one example. And then the fourth question in this series is to get the student to work up a list of what things are going to be needed to work on a particular question. And my point here is simply to stress that you don't need a lot of fancy equipment. You have access to nice equipment, and you can certainly use that, but it's not a requirement for a successful undergraduate research project. Especially since I'm in the field of basically insect behavior, the best equipment you have is your pair of eyes. So equipment ranges from what? The question also comes up with students as to whether they should work in the field or in the laboratory. And over the years, I have come to prefer laboratory just because it's a lot more reliable. You don't have weather issues, you don't have transportation issues, you don't have as many safety issues. It's basically easier to monitor. There are many wonderful field projects, and I guess if I were an insect ecologist, I would have students out doing transects, or if I were a crop entomologist, we'd be doing stuff out in the plots. But if you're trying to do behavior in the field, it's a lot iffier. Depends on having a nice day, having insects at the right stage, etc., and things happening. So I've always, in recent years, tend to lean toward the laboratory, and which insect to study is the next question. And here's where I take those four questions and slowly say, why don't we do something that interests me, my graduate students, and try to plug in projects that work there. But I don't have an absolute and hard rule on that. I've had a number of students take on projects that had nothing to do with my direct research interests, and they've been very successful at it. It's, again, as you saw, very mature student, knew what he wanted to do, able to get right in and go for it. And when you've got students like that, it's fantastic. And if you've got a clueless student, sometimes if you're going to get anywhere, it's good to just give them a little bit of direction. So I'm going to conclude just by talking briefly about the wow bugs and why this has been such a great organism to use for students in the laboratory, because they can get meaningful results, they can get into the project right away, and one of the benefits is that the life cycle is quick, 25 days from egg to adult, and when you get the adults out, it's a gregarious parasitoid wasp is what the wow bug is, and you have 500 plus adults. So if a student manages to kill a few, as it happened, or a few escape in the process of handling, it's no big deal. And if nothing goes right that first experiment, you start another culture and you've got more, and you've still got a few weeks left in the semester to get some data and get some projects. So during the first 3 weeks, in fact, after we've done that first activity of answering those four questions and brainstorming a bit, and I've steered them to wow bugs, and we specifically brainstorm about wow bugs, they get acquainted with the organism. They're given a culture, given the wasp, given the host, and told to make a culture, watch it, take observations, learn how to handle it, and in the same time start to refine that research question that they're going to ultimately look at. That weekly lab meeting serves to sort of keep them on track. They become aware of what the graduate students are doing. They've started to read some of the literature that's maybe lying around the lab. And I put this one in mainly just to point out that this poster was an undergraduate research project. I got a student from the art department who was doing a double major between scientific illustration and biology and wanted a project. And so he went through this same whole process and ultimately produced a series of drawings and put it together into a poster. He would bring drafts of the drawings and we'd say, well, you better take another look under the microscope and see what you see. This is not quite the way it is. And it was it turned out to be a very interesting project, and this poster is probably going to be produced commercially and sold with the wild bugs that Carolina Biological sells 365 days of the year. So this 3 weeks immersion with wild bugs, they find them really to be quite novel and different, and they become aware of many facets of their biology. For example, the sexual dimorphism, the male's eye is essentially vestigial, he's got weird antennae, he turns out to be rare, there's only three males and 97 females in that culture, and he's going to mate with all of his sisters. And in the process, he's only three males, but he fights with his brothers, and he usually kills one, and there may only end up to be one. Here's one that's been decapitated and is latched onto the hind tarsus of that guy. Nevertheless, he's quite able. We actually watched him mate with a series of the females. It's a highly inbred system. Well, there's a lot of biological richness in this system, and the good news is that from research, very little is actually published. There's not a lot known, and in addition to this species, we have five other species in this genus that we keep in culture in the laboratory, so that there's a lot of options to take this. But before they go too far, we throw in another writing assignment that we evolved a few years ago, because critical thinking is something we're trying to get these undergraduates to do. They're no longer in the lecture, they're trying to think about a research project and a question, and it really helps to have them go through the process, write down what question it is, come up with a hypothesis. And we talk about this in the weekly lab meetings, and they see examples of it. What variables are you going to change? What's going to be kept constant? If you're going to have a little experimental design, give us a sketch, list the materials, and what kinds of specific things do you want to observe? What are you going to measure? Because you've got to quantify stuff if you're doing it. And how are you going to record the data? And even go so far as to think about how your data are going to look. How are you going to record that in your lab book or notebook? And it's always a big eye-opener when you get these back. It reminds you, 9 times out of 10, how naive the students are and why they're there and why you're being useful. I circled with red some of the comments that I made. I apologize if you can't quite read all of this, but the student, for example, says, what variables will remain constant? One side of the Y-form will be at room temperature. Well, no, this is going to be one of the things that you're supposed to change in the third question. And what measurements will you take? Well, they didn't put any measurements. You got to quantify something. The student says to see how long the wild bug takes to move from cold environment to another. And so you take this as a starting point, because every student, and some of them are very sophisticated, and there's not any one particular experiment that we're trying to lead them to. We want them to come up with something that interests them, and they will come up with something that interests them, and most likely something that's never been done before. And by this process of going back and forth, they come to evolve a fairly decent project in a fairly short time. Finally, when we get toward the end of the semester, it's time to communicate the results. And just like we've heard at other institutions, the University of Georgia has a program which is called CURO. It's the Center for Undergraduate Research Opportunities, and they hold an annual student research symposium. And we make it clear at the beginning, in fact, in all the materials that advertise undergraduate research, that participation in CURO with a poster or an oral presentation is going to be expected. And that involves quite a lot of time as well. Once the student has got the data, then we've got the analysis to go through, some simple statistical things, and scientific writing. And for most of them, they've never had to write a paper in college, and never had to write a research style. There's a lot that goes into this whole aspect, and one could do the whole talk on scientific writing. It differs in a lot of ways from the way they wrote their term papers in English. We all know that, but the students are often fairly surprised. We have our own jargon. I think you can read this. We tend to I think we can all see ourselves in some of these phrases. So in the end, we want to help these students to metamorphose into successful scientists. We don't want them just to pupate. And I think it's imperative, again, and I'm again preaching to the choir, tomorrow's scientists are in our classrooms today, and it's a pretty darn awesome responsibility. So, that said, those of us who spend a lot of our time mentoring undergraduate research, hopefully, and I have plenty of evidence and feedback from students over the years that it has indeed made a difference, and we heard several students testify to that today, And that's what keeps you going as the professor, even without any real tangible rewards. So thanks to all those undergraduate guinea pigs and to the wild bugs. All of them have taught me very much. And thanks again for inviting me to be a part of this symposium.